When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Can you imagine him coaching college?
No.
Absolutely not.
Can you
recruiting an 18-year-old?
You really want to come here? I mean, we don't really want you anyway, but I guess you could come. We'll figure out if you play.
If you bring your parents and use them as a third party, you're gone. You're off the team. We're direct.
Some scar tissue built up here among these guys.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. That was Tom Brady and Gronk, Rob Gronkowski, talking about their old coach taking the North Carolina job last Sunday before he actually took the North Carolina job, just the prospect of it. And so Bill Belichick has done it. He's gone to the college game. And you had an assignment, Mr. Haw. You were asked earlier this morning to tell us exactly what success would look like for Bill Belichick. You didn't like the idea that it's championship or bust.
I didn't.
For Bill.
I have to be honest, I didn't. You said that and it stopped me a little bit because I hadn't really thought of it in those terms. Because I don't believe that Bill Belichick has to win a national championship to justify his return, or not even return, to him coaching a college program. I don't think that college football, and this is totally my personal bias. I understand that. We're all framed by our own experiences.
Let's go.
I don't believe that college football is the same as pro football in that the bottom line results-oriented nature of the NFL is you win a Super Bowl or you are unsuccessful. It's a professional sports operation. And I understand the NCAA is as close to pro sports and pro football as it's ever been.
Yes.
That's why Bill Belichick is there. But I still think that it's as much about the journey as it is the destination.
You think that's why he's there?
Well, I think he's there to professionalize the program. He has said himself that he is there to make guys ready for the NFL, and he's going to structure it, already hiring Mike Lombardi as his general manager of operations at North Carolina for the football program. This is the way that major college football is played, structured, and I understand that is the way this goes now. But I don't think that ultimately every one of those players goes to North Carolina having to win a national championship or else feeling like it was a mistake to go there. Whereas I think if you go to an NFL team, you want to win a Super Bowl or else you'll feel, I mean, it's the bottom line.
Yeah, but you know Bill.
Yes.
And we've talked about this idea that he is perhaps the greatest coach in the history of the NFL. And he has won 6 Super Bowls. Tom Brady won the next run without him. You don't think Bill wants another Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think he wants.
Bill is in college football.
I think he wants to win the national championship, but I don't think that he has to win a national championship or else this experience will be a failure.
Oh, I didn't say it would be a failure.
Or that is a definition of necessarily
of success for Bill
Belichick. He can reach success by elevating this program to a level it's never been elevated to. You can win a conference, something they haven't done since 1980. You can make history.
So if he wins the ACC, you think that's a success?
Yes.
Does he think that's a success?
Probably not. Although, I don't know how this experience will change his definition of success. I do think it's different. I think that I run the risk of being accused of being terribly naive. I get that. But I do think it's different. And I think that his experience will maybe adjust his definition. If you're the NFL and you have his success level, yeah, if you go to the Jacksonville Jaguars, he would have been expected to win a Super Bowl. Because that's what he would bring. If you go to college football, you want to bring your university, you want to bring your program success it's never experienced before. Mm. That is the definition of making history, making an impact, and affecting the lives of guys they're going to be choosing North Carolina because you are there. You're the reason they're going to North Carolina.
And, you know, I think what's fascinating to me is the idea that Bill, he just settled. It feels like he settled for a college football job because he couldn't get back in the NFL or he couldn't get the sort of interest he got. He got left out in the cold last year. Bill is 13 wins away from being the all-time tying Don Shula. So he'd need 14 professional wins to be the all-time winningest coach in NFL history. Don Shula started as a head coach when he was like 16. Bill Belichick was later to the party because he put in a lot of years and he was an assistant and he is now 72 years old. He'll be 73 in April. There are not a lot of NFL possibilities. He's almost put to rest this idea. I mean, I'm sure those guys in Miami are popping champagne in honor of Don Shula.
Probably are, yeah. Larry Zonka is lifting a glass to this move. I also think that suggests to me that what I'm saying is even more true. Because if it were all about just the bottom line, I've got to be ahead of Don Shula. I've got to win a national championship to justify this move. I don't think he would be there. I think that it's interesting to do, you know, to read about this stuff and to look into the past and see him be quoted as 20 years ago in a David Halberstam story, book about wanting to return or wanting to go to a college and coach. He considers himself a teacher. Now, we can snicker at that and we can laugh about some of the things.
Oh, he is a teacher.
But there's an idealism still I think he must have if he's going to return to coaching. I think he balances the idealism with the bottom line nature of the way he approaches the job very well, but he still considers himself a teacher. So there's value in that, and there's a reward in that that doesn't necessarily have to be bottom line. If I don't win the national title, this has not been a success. I think success will come in his having impact on these players, impact on the program, and impact on the university.
Yeah, I think if Bill isn't in a national championship picture, the top 12 in 3 years, I don't think he's going to feel like he's been doing his job well enough. Mm-hmm. I think that the way that he will view it, he is there to bring professionalism to a college program. He's going to run it. He's going to teach guys everything that happens in the NFL, and this is how you have to understand the game, and this is what. And we've seen him, even on this goofy Inside the NFL show on the CW, where he's talking to these professional players, the way he's talking to them is like a teacher in front of the room, and he loves that stuff, and he's great at it.
He's displayed personality I don't think a lot of people thought that he had.
I'm not sure he has it, but he's displaying it. No, I just think...
You don't think he has personality?
No, he has a lot of personality.
Yeah, I was surprised by it.
Yeah, see, I told you, a couple of those practices at the Super Bowl, I got to go out and watch, and I remember going out there and just how loose and easy those teams were, how incredibly.
Well, his teams, but with him.
But I'm saying he
hasn't he surprised you with the levity? A little more levity than I would have expected.
Yeah, well, I mean, I never bought into the idea that he was an automaton because he used to do this. I used to watch it all the time. He would do these breakdowns of teams and games, and he would do it like on the Patriots website. It was excellent. It mm-hmm. was just the guy knows the game inside and out, and I get it. Like, you know, he's a serious person, and he's not like constantly making a joke or he's not. But you could definitely tell that he understood that he had to connect with people, and he managed to do so. And you see when he's on the Manning cast, and I know you hate it, but the idea when they have guys on that he used to coach, the levity that they share with him and the jokes they tell and
right.
the way that he handles that, you know, the respect, the mutual respect. So I just feel like Bill, I think among the winners in this thing, the ACC is a winner. Jim Phillips, our buddy, the commissioner of the ACC, they had a rough year, and they somehow still managed to get two teams in the
Final
12.
Rough.
And now they got – I'm just saying,
they
Miami
got two
and
teams.
What happened at the end.
And they got two teams and
they got
without
two
getting
teams
Miami in.
Which is extraordinary.
It's extraordinary.
And now,
they
you, got,
big
now
fish.
You got Bill. And he is what anyone wants to say. What it doesn't matter what you want to say. He's one of the greatest coaches of the game. He might be the best ever coach of the game of football. And now he's in the college level. And if you don't think he believes that he's going to win the ACC and compete for a national championship, then
I think he does think he can do that. And I believe that they will be competitive. And I think in 3 years, if that's the window you want to open, and that's a time frame that seems realistic, and I think it is, then yeah, I could conceivably see North Carolina competing for an ACC championship, a national championship, being part of the 12-team playoff within the next 3 years. I don't think that's an exaggeration. Not in today's college football, the way the transfer portal works
yes.
and the way that it's commensurate and comparative to NFL free agency. He's going to put the best team on the field that North Carolina has ever seen.
Yeah, I agree with
all
you.
I'm saying is that if he gets into the 12-team playoff and they get eliminated in the first round and he looks back at his 3 years, if it's 3 years, and he's done all that suggests he will have done, I'm going to look at that as a successful foray into college football. I'm not going to look at it as a disappointment.
You know who else is going to be a big winner here? Is Michael Jordan. Because Michael Jordan supplies that football program with Jumpman gear, and he's going to come out with a Belichick hoodie.
It's about time he got a break.
A North Carolina Belichick hoodie.
That's awesome.
That we're all going to be wearing.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
I think so. Well, you already have a lot of powder blue in your wardrobe.
But Honolulu blue, according to Dustin.
That's lion blue. I think it's powder blue when it's Carolina blue.
Okay.
But nonetheless, you have a lot of light blue.
I'm changing my colors. I'm going all teal now after the White Sox.
All teal? Yeah, that's good.
That's not true. No, but I do think that Bill will measure himself again. And you're right. I mean, he's got a big ego. He's a great coach. But he will be expecting different things from everybody around him than maybe they're used to.
How he puts together his staff will be fascinating.
I agree.
The fact that his son may be the coach in waiting is something would be, to me, conditional. If you're a 72-year-old taking over a program, I would want to secure that. His staff would have to be handsomely paid.
Oh, yeah.
That's why Mike Lombardi is leaving VEASAN and going to be the general manager of the North Carolina football program. You can envision that. That's going to be a job. I'm fascinated to see how other programs follow suit. Stanford went to Andrew Luck. That's a big move.
Yeah.
Even though he may be a relative novice in the game as well, but that brings you status and it brings you a certain gravitas. Mike Lombardi knows how to play the game. If he doesn't now, he will in a week because that's how quickly he'll adjust and adapt. Bill Belichick will do the same thing. So how he structures his staff and how he structures his job, what is his job description? Do you think he's going to be grinding tape on Wake Forest? Or do you think he's going to be being the CEO type that oversees game plans, approves player moves, and evaluates talent? I'm not quite sure, but I think we have seen, not to compare these two, but Deion Sanders is not exactly your conventional head football coach at a major college program. and right. he's done pretty well at Colorado.
Yeah, but obviously much differently than Bill will do.
It's a new job description.
Yeah.
But by that, I only use Deion Sanders, but you don't have to. It's not the old days where you are grinding tape, maybe.
Well, I think that's what he's going to do.
Do you think so?
Oh, Bill? That's what he does. I think Bill will be doing the things that made him the greatest coach.
I don't think he's going to be able to do that to the extent that he used to do that because of the other real-time demands on the job. You have to recruit your own players. You've got to keep track of the transfer portal. I mean, yes, the value and the advantage has always come because schematically he understands what he's looking at and how to adjust and put players in the right position to succeed. But I do think that he's going to have to structure it so he's not just going to be in his office watching tape all the time. Right?
Yeah, I changed, man. I don't think it's just that. What's he been doing? You know, we heard from Brian Baldinger, who told us that his car is parked in NFL Films, yeah. and he's in there breaking right. down tape. I mean, that's what the man.
But now
does.
He's got 85 players to worry about.
Yeah,
and he's got more than that in the portal.
He won't be alone. He will be with so many, huh?
We know that.
Oh no, I'm saying he'll have tons of people working with him, but that's he'll be doing what he does best.
815 Texter. Signetti got IU in the playoff in year one. David, glad you gave Belichick 3 years.
Well, that's to be in the 12. Oh, I guess Signetti's in the 12. Okay.
Yeah. You think North Carolina can be in the playoffs next year?
I don't know what their base is. I don't know who's left there or what the program looks like. I don't know how many players they got to bring in. I don't know. I think I know this.
It's a fair point, though.
If I were the kind of guy that wanted to get in the NFL, if it was Dustin Rhodes and he thought he was a coach away from the league, he would transfer there and he would leave St. Norbert's or wherever he was at the time and he would go there, right?
One of his five schools?
Yeah.
Dustin invented the transfer portal before the transfer portal existed.
On his way to the NFL, yeah. So, but he was damned with
it's
not
a good point.
Enough height and strength.
Is 3 years like too long to give him?
Mm-hmm.
Is this texter suggesting that he should pull a Kurt Cignetti and be in the playoffs next year? Well, okay, maybe. I don't look at college football the way that I look at the NFL. I look at the NFL as you have one winner and everybody else essentially is losers. In the college football, I do not look at it that way. I just don't. Maybe it's just the way I'm wired, the way my experiences, whatever. I don't look at everyone who doesn't win a national championship had a lousy season. I'm never going to look at Illinois that way. Illinois had a great year, a transformative year in Champaign because of Brett Bielema, the power of his personality, the way that he changed lives and impacted kids' careers.
No question.
They lost three games.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so they're going to a bowl game that nobody's going to pay attention to. What, the Cheez-Its Bowl?
I think we're going to watch it.
We're going to watch it. I'm going to have some Cheez-Its.
Yes.
Although I don't like Cheez-Its. I'll eat some Cheez-Its.
Have some Daisy Dips with that. Don't get me started.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, you could dip a Cheez-It in ranch.
Cha-ching. Oh. No, that's an idea. I think I could do that. If I dipped a Cheez-It in ranch, I would definitely watch it.
What don't you like about a Cheez-It?
I don't know. It's a little light. A little airy.
You know,
overrated.
There is a great Tennyson poem called Ulysses about the Homer epic, about Ulysses the king has returned and he's been at home all these years and he has this travel weariness. He cannot shake the idea that he wants to go back and sail the seas and get the whole crew together. I can't stop thinking about that poem when I think about Belichick coaching in college.
Well, you're getting...
Get the whole gang back together.
It's a little football romanticism.
And that's what it is.
It is.
And it's... and it,
good.
It, yeah, are you good. Telling me that can't work?
No, Molly, I'm not telling you can't work.
I think it's...
I'm saying it doesn't have to work.
Oh,
It doesn't have to end in a national championship for it to work. I think it can be a beautiful experience. I think it can be a meaningful experience. I think it can be all those things. And it doesn't have to result in a national championship for me to think that it was successful. This is a great move for college football. This is a tremendous power play for North Carolina. Maybe they win. And if they don't, I'll be okay.
He'll get the whole crew back together. They'll be down there, and it'll be...
You want Charlie Weiss to be in powder
blue?
You want Matt Patricia sitting up straight in Chapel Hill?
And he will recite Ulysses.
Oh God,
you will have Bill stand up, and he'll say, "We are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven. That which we are, we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find... and not to yield."
The English major strikes again.
That is Bill at North Carolina.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. All right. We need to talk to Billy Donovan.
All right. What? We'll do that next. It's falling on the score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
You know, the one thing I really appreciate and respect about Arturs from the get-go has been, you know, building, you know, a winning culture. And this is kind of almost in a certain way a reset. I don't want to say a total start over because we have certainly players back from the past couple of years. But, you know, it's a situation where can we establish an environment, a culture, you know, a foundation of how we need to play and also, you know, try to do the things and set into motion the things that we have to do that impacts winning on a daily basis.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That, of course, the voice of Billy Donovan, and what a delight to welcome the Bulls coach to the program. He joins us now on the Aturo Hotline, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Billy, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
It's always fun to talk to you, and we're excited to do so. I've been dying to ask you this question most of the year. I'm just so curious. When you think about the way you guys are playing and the sort of faster, different pace of the game, and certainly the three-point shooting, et cetera, is that you adopting your style of play to the team that you have, or is that the changing nature of the NBA?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of both. I think anytime, as a coach, you're going into a season, you have to look at your personnel and, how does that personnel play together collectively, and how do you take advantage of, each individual guy's skill set. And, I think I said, even last year, as much as we maybe needed to play a little bit faster on missed shots, we had some very, very high IQ, intelligent players that, were really, really good at reading defenses. And, we were probably a lot more of a half-court team, and that was probably more my decision on what I thought was best for our team, last year, last couple of years. And, I've always been kind of a coach that's always played up-tempo, but I also think you've got to try to utilize the skill set to the best of your ability with your personnel. I think this year with our team, and certainly a lot of younger guys getting more of an opportunity, one is I do think, the trending in the NBA of the way the game is going, no question. But also I think, we had talked about even before the season started that we were going to be somewhat challenged defensively, and certainly we got to keep getting better and trying to get better. But the one thing I think for our group is if we could play faster and more in the open court, that would probably suit, this group better.
Billy, we could have introduced you as the longest tenured Chicago coach, and I think that's a credit to what you've been able to do in with the Bulls. And just curious, not needing you to weigh in on the other moves that other teams have made in the city, but if you could speak to just how different the challenges might be in Chicago, how difficult it might be for somebody like you to have tenure established and to be able to function in an environment that can be quite challenging at times.
Yeah, the one thing I think that happens, at least, and again, this is more of an overview of my thoughts, because when there's seasons going on like the Blackhawks season or the Bears season or our season, you don't really get a chance to maybe follow as much because you're so entrenched in what you're doing in the fall and in the winter, right? But I mean, in talking about professional sports, one of the things that I've seen happen is, my time, in college, I was always around a lot of NBA coaches, from Jeff Van Gundy to Rick Carlisle, when Eric Spoelstra was down in Miami, Stan Van Gundy and Steve Clifford when they were in Orlando, and one of the things that they always talked about, and Jeff had talked about this with me, when he first started out as an assistant coach with the Knicks, it was the trainer, the head coach, and three assistants. I think what's happened is, and again, this is not speaking about the Bears or the Blackhawks or the Cubs or the White Sox. I just don't know those situations. But just being in a professional environment, the staffs have grown immensely. They've gotten so big. And I know just even in the NBA, you're dealing with an entire medical team that helps try to keep these guys playing on the court, available and healthy. You obviously have got front offices that have continued to expand. You have coaching staffs that have continued to expand. You have player development groups that have continued to expand. So you bring in a lot of people, and I think in a lot of ways, sometimes the issue is not competency at all. It's about how well a group can function together. And you can see how things can get with the number of people, challenging. And I think it comes down to how well, you want your team as a coach to sacrifice, to play together, to be unselfish, you know, to root for the next guy, to lift the next guy up, to make the group better. And I've always been a big believer, as you know, as it relates to our coaching staff, we can't expect our players to do those things if we're not doing those things as a staff, you know, first and foremost. And I think in order to, you know, function at a high level organizationally, there's a lot of people that need to all be on the same page. And you can kind of see how things can get very, very challenging if you don't have, first and foremost, really good relationships. And the mentality of, what am I doing, you know, in my position to make the people around me better? What are my assistant coaches doing to make the people around them better? And that doesn't necessarily always include the players, it just includes organizationally. So, you know, I think that's always been very, very important to me because, you know, the season of 82 games is very, very challenging, and you're dealing with guys in and out. You're dealing with a guy in a slump. You're dealing with a guy that maybe he's not playing as well as he wants to, or you're dealing with a guy that's not in the rotation or playing as much as he wants. When you're dealing with all those things, and now you're dealing with dysfunction, you know, inside your staff or relational issues inside your staff, it becomes incredibly difficult to manage. And I think the one thing we've had here since I've been here, and again, I'm not speaking for any other team in the city, I'm just talking about here, there's been a lot of, I think, direct, open conversation, transparency. It doesn't mean that we always agree or always on the same page. But what it does mean is, okay, we're going to row the boat in the same direction as best we can, you know, and we're all going to work together as best we can. And I do think that the one thing for me that's important is the relational piece, you know, with ownership, with front office, with the medical, with the player development, with our team. You know, you have to be able to, I think, have these conversations. Like I said, it's not always easy conversations, but you have to have them. And it takes a lot to try to keep everybody moving in the same direction.
That's a really interesting answer. And as long as we're not talking specifically about basketball, let me ask you one more. Belichick goes to coach in college. Now, you coached in college. You came into the NBA. You've done a reversal of what he's doing, and I've seen other people do it. I just wonder your thoughts on a guy who's like maybe the best football coach we've ever seen in the professional level, now going to the college game as we're in a world of NIL and transfer portal and a world that you didn't even have to deal with.
Right. Well, you know, the one thing I really feel fortunate about, and I've said this before, when I was at Florida, you know, going through good times or bad times or whatever, I always tried to reach out to different coaches. And I really was able to develop a really good relationship with Coach Belichick. And we spent a lot of time together. And I think because of him really being heavily involved in the NFL draft and putting together his teams in New England for so many years, he spent a lot of time even on Florida's campus with Florida coaches as he, you know, was getting prepared for the draft. And I'd imagine he went all around the country meeting with players, meeting with coaches. The one thing that's very interesting about him is I think he's a lifelong learner. He's always looking to learn. And I think his relationships run really, really deep. They run really, really deep at the NFL level. They run really, really deep at the college level. And I would even say the high school level. He is very, very in love with coaching the game of football, getting teams to perform at the highest level. And I do think the year off for him, it probably put him in a position where he has an understanding of college and the dynamics. And, you know, he's obviously an unbelievable coach, and he can coach at any level. Now, he hasn't done it, you know, day-to-day at the college level, but I would imagine the time off that he's had, he's taken a deep dive into what kind of impact he could have at the college level. And I think he'll be great. I think he'll do an unbelievable job. I think he knows exactly what he wants to do. I think he has a very clear understanding of what goes into winning and what he needs to have, you know, winning be impacted by how he structures his staff, how he structures NIL, how he structures his team, how he wants to play. You know, here's a guy that you know, a lot of times I think for a guy to go to the from the NFL to college, you sit there and say, well, he's not really been a part of any personnel decisions. That's all he did, and he spent an enormous amount of time on it. So him going to college and identifying the players that he feels are going to help North Carolina get to a level he wants to, he did that for a good portion of his head coaching career. So he knows exactly what he's looking for and what he wants to get done. So I think he'll do an incredible job.
Talk with Bulls coach Billy Donovan here on the Mully and Haas show. So we'll ask you a question about your team because of the return of Patrick Williams Friday, expected to make an impact. But how do you balance getting him back into the rotation with Matez Buzelis, who's been very good in his absence? So you've got the development of a rookie first-round draft pick with Patrick Williams, who has to play a role on your team. How do you balance that, Billy, and how is it different now since Matez has maybe emerged more than he did before?
Yeah, you know, this is I think the challenge for us, you know, staff wise, even for our team. And you guys mentioned it before. You know, one of the things that happened the last couple of years that I felt like with the way we were playing, we were probably in a 9-man rotation. At times now, because of the pace and speed we're playing at, you know, one of the things that's happened is if you look at the number of possessions right now for our team per game, you know, we may be first or second or third, but there's a lot of possessions. And it's really, really hard minute-wise for guys to play incredibly long stretches. Like, I would say with the pace and speed we're playing with, to be effective and efficient, there's probably nobody on our team that could play the whole first quarter. It's just be physically too much. Then you're looking at 82 games, and then you're dealing with the medical guys of, okay, how do we practice? How do we get these guys fresh? How do we still, you know, grow and learn? The challenge for us is going to be, one, Lonzo coming off the wrist injury is on a minute restriction, and we've moved him up to 20 minutes. Patrick's going to come back with a minute restriction. So now you start to think about, okay, how do you get him back into the flow of things, knowing that you have a certain amount of minutes that he has to play with? So that may mean him coming off the bench for a little bit. That may mean him eventually coming back into the starting role. You look at the fact that if he's on, let's say, a 20 to 25 minute restriction, do you shorten the game for him and now all of a sudden don't start him and bring him back in a little bit later? But I do think for Julian Phillips, for Matez, their development for our team, we need those guys. So they need to be out there. I do think one of the things we got to evolve into is when you have Vooch out there or you have, you know, Jalen Smith out there at the center spot, they're not necessarily creators. I think Matez and Julian Phillips in particular will get better playing off the dribble. But if you end up playing, let's say, Matez and Julian together with Jalen, you don't really have three ball handlers, and you're trying to play really fast. So you've got to have more handling out there. And because we've been relatively deep at the guard position, one of the reasons we've tried to play faster was to try to get all those guys involved in utilizing your skill set. So the minute part of it to me is not as important in terms of a guy playing 25 to 20 as much as are we creating a style of play and an identity on a nightly basis. You know, and it's going to have to be some form of sacrifice. But I do think Matez has done a very good job. I think he continues to get better. I think he's going to be able to do more things off the dribble as he gets more experience. I think Julian has gotten better. He's improved. And, you know, that's been kind of one of the things we've had to work through a little bit is at that forward position with Patrick and Julian Phillips and Matez. There's three guys kind of in the same spot. So we're going to have to evolve out two of those guys at times being on the floor together. But then how do you balance and match it where you have enough ball handling and play creation out there as well? So I don't necessarily think Patrick coming back for a period of time, he's just going to have a minute restriction. And I don't think that that's going to bleed into Matez. And I think getting to a point of even Matez and Patrick playing together is something that would be good because Patrick in his, you know, several years into the NBA, he's kind of developed at least a skill set where he can play off the dribble a little bit more. I think Matez, being 25 games into his career, that's something he's going to evolve into.
Coach, I'm very curious about, I know you teach the game, I know you learned the game, and you were a gym rat as a player, and I think that a lot of guys in the NBA, we understand how they learn the game, and you play morning, noon, night, and you go to the park, and we've all been through it, and obviously not as good as players that make the NBA, but how did Josh Giddey learn the game, and how do you teach him the game? It feels to me like being from Australia, it's just kind of a different style. It's a different understanding. I mean, he almost learned it on the national team, it feels like. Is there a difference in the way people from different places have learned the game? We always said in Chicago, you know, we called it West Side, which was make it, take it. And you developed a lot of shooters and a lot of scores. In Philly, supposedly, their half-court game was the minute the ball hit the rim, it was available for a possession from either team, and they developed rebounders and guys that could dunk the ball right back. I just wonder how they developed the game in Australia. Does that matter?
You know, I think it's a good point. I know growing up in New York, right, like you're outside playing in the park and there's a bunch of guys out there waiting to play, and the last thing you're going to do when it's point game is take jump shots. Everything was to the rim. You know what I mean? Just because there's no net. The wind's blowing. You're outside, right? Everything's to the rim. You know, the thing that's interesting, and I've always thought about this to your question, like I recruited Mike Miller. You know, he was from South Dakota. And I just, Mitchell, South Dakota, I couldn't understand how a kid from Mitchell, South Dakota had an unbelievable feel of how to play the game the way he did. He was 6'8", 6'9", and he was playing with guys that were all 6 feet on his high school team. I played for a great high school coach, and he had brothers that played as well that were older than him. But I was always so amazed, you know, and I always would ask him, like, how did you learn? Because he had such an unbelievable feel. I think for Josh, you know, I think all his experiences have probably helped him. The one thing with him is he's very, very instinctive. And that's the one thing I'd say about Mike. And I don't know how those guys get it. There's just an instinctiveness to them, whether it's passing or seeing things as it's developing. And I don't know if he was born that way or if his experiences, you know. I know his dad was a really, really terrific player, you know, over in Australia. I'm sure he had a huge impact on him while he was growing up. But, you know, it's just he has a real good knack and instinct for the game, just – you know, being able to kind of make plays. Now, you know, one of the things we've talked to him a little bit about is the turnover piece, because he is a guy that can really thread the needle and really make some unbelievable creative passes. But you want to let a guy obviously play on his instincts. But I'm not quite sure, you know, it's probably a combination of his dad being a former player and playing professionally, you know, in Australia. It's probably his national team, probably what he's been exposed to. It could be, you know, for a guy like Mike Miller, I knew that, you know, he told me when he was younger, he was never really that much taller than everybody. So he kind of learned to play with the ball in his hands, and he grew to be 6'9", and that skill set was still there with him. So I think it's probably a combination of a lot of things that's put him into that situation of him learning how to play the game.
Great stuff, Coach. Thanks a ton. Great catching up with you. Always fun to talk to you.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
No, great catching up. Thank you.
Take care.
That is the Bulls coach, Billy Donovan. The Chicago Bulls will host the Charlotte Hornets tomorrow at the United Center. This is a newly scheduled game for the Bulls with the Emirates NBA Cup group play over with. And the good news is great deals on tickets remain available. Head to bulls.com/tickets. You can catch the Bulls in action Friday night at 7 p.m.
Should be a good one.
No question. Okay, we'll be right back. Mully and Haw on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We talked to Billy Donovan. We ran out of time to bring in our guy Nick Costos from You Better You Bet, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. But Nick, being the good man he is, gave us his prop.
Yes, he did.
He's the king of the props, and his prop is for tonight's game. He said go with the over on 67.5 yards receiving by Juwan Jennings. That is his pick for tonight's game.
Available at BetMGM. So Nick gives us his prop bet tonight. Good game. Rams and 49ers. Thursday night football. We had a good conversation with Billy Donovan, though.
I really enjoyed it.
There's never enough time to get in everything you want to talk to with Billy Donovan, because he has such thoughtful answers and explanations.
He's great.
Who knew that he had that kind of relationship with Bill Belichick? I did not.
Did you know that he had recruited Mike Miller out of San Diego? That's extraordinary.
South Dakota. Yeah, South Dakota. But his feel for the game. Down. I do remember Mike Miller being an impactful college player in Billy Donovan's program. I did not realize he came from South Dakota.
You know, Bill Walton was a guy that played point guard as a kid and then grew to be a seven-footer. And he had that knowledge of the game and that way of looking at the
Anthony
game.
Anthony Davis.
There's another example. A guy
you know, that, somebody who grew, had a growth spurt and explained it. And the feel for the game is hard to describe and expect. Josh Giddey, good explanation, good comp, and I think Billy Donovan always has something to say.
Yeah. I guess they didn't play defense in Australia. Oh, stop it.
Big's All time right. is next.
Big's time. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score.